Murata. Pitley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports. The local sports leader.
You know, we want to enjoy this. We'll look at the film when we get on the plane. Obviously, there's some emotion still, I would imagine, just because that's a place where we didn't play that well in the playoffs. But we're a bit different as a team from injuries, personnel. So are they. I mean, they just played against the guy that was really important to them in Brunson, and they had a big win in New York. So we'll look at the film tonight. We'll prepare as we always do, and we'll try to do our best in a pretty cool environment and try to get a win before we go home.
It's Monty Williams, head coach of the Suns, after his team destroyed the San Antonio Spurs yesterday, and no rest as the Texas tour continues. A game against the Dallas Mavericks tonight, 6:30 tip-off. Tim Ring in for Bick all this week here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, and yeah, he talked about it. It's going to be a cool environment, is what he said. That's a way of saying there's going to be a lot of energy among Mavericks fans in that building. You know, they beat the Suns in the playoffs last year. Suns are off to the good start, still number one in the West. The Mavericks have floundered around 500, even though Luka Doncic has been on a tear the entire season, averaging 33 points per game. But, you know, I said this could be a statement win for the Suns. This could, on the flip side of it, if the Mavericks can knock off the Suns, it could serve as maybe a catalyst for them to improve what they've done on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's early December, but I don't think there's any question, Vinny, that this is a budding rivalry. You got not only the two teams, you've got the improbable Mavericks kind of come from behind win in the Western Conference semis last year. There was some, I don't want to say bad blood, but there was certainly, there's some trash talking. There was the Suns and Devin Booker mocking Luka a little bit, and then Luka, you know, kind of getting the best of the Suns. There was the Chris Paul incident in the stands with the Mavericks fans that went down. There was obviously the fact that the Suns and their number one seed, they were sent home. They meet on opening night this year. Suns come back from, what, 18 down to win that game in a thriller. You got Booker and Doncic perhaps squaring off and an MVP race that likely will include both of them to a certain extent.
Yep.
So there's a lot going on with these two teams that probably isn't going away anytime soon. So what you have tonight is just the latest addition in a budding rivalry in the NBA.
Yeah, as far as...
And it's pretty cool.
As far the way I view it, and as far as I know, it's never been talked about publicly, but you mentioned some things between Doncic and Booker. And this is just me speculating. Because Devin Booker's got friends in the league. To his credit, he doesn't play up those friendships on game day. He is a stone-cold competitor. I don't think Luka Doncic is one of his friends. In fact, I think there's probably a good amount of two-sided dislike between those two players. I get the feeling, especially focusing on Devin Booker, that he doesn't like Luka Doncic very much. Do you get that feeling?
A little bit.
Yeah.
And the feeling might be mutual.
Yeah.
Again, I can't get that it's almost like a meme now of Luka grinning in Booker's grill on the free throw line deal. You know, almost mocking.
Yeah, I get...
Well, Booker did it right back.
I get a little triggered every time I see that picture, quite honestly. And maybe this is just me projecting my dislike for Luka.
Yeah, you're...
And assigning it to Devin Booker.
You're not Team Luka. I know, I get that.
I'm not. Unbelievable player.
Maybe Luka doesn't have many friends in the league, period.
Well, that's kind of where I was going, because, you know, the Mavericks, 11-11. Dallas has, you know, since he's come into the league, he's obviously, his skill set, he dominates games. And he dominates the ball. Why are the Dallas Mavericks still this... And last year, I think that run was a little bit of an outlier. I think the Suns were a better basketball team. The Mavericks got in their head. Give them credit; they won the series. But, you know, why have the Mavericks not accomplished more with Luka Doncic? You can ask yourself the question: is he a player that other top talent around the league is going to flock to Dallas to play with? I tend to think that the answer is no on that.
Part of that problem, to build on that, was they haven't been able to find the right person to play with him. They thought Porzingis was like, you know, that's our next decade of, you know, the combo, and he's already gone.
Yeah, but guess what? Kristaps Porzingis has been reborn to a degree. He's averaging 21.8 points per game in Washington.
But you're right. Luka might just be that kind of player that is so great but not necessarily to make your team a championship team. I don't know. Is that
it's weird too? Is it's not like he doesn't share the ball. He's a tremendous passer. He's among the league leaders in assists.
Just find a couple dudes who stand in the corner and knock down shots, and they'll be fine.
But those guys aren't the top talents in the league. Those guys can be found anywhere. And we talked about this a bit last week about, you know, what you need to win an NBA championship. You know, at times maybe three stars, definitely two. They've got one. They've got one star. And even Porzingis, when he was, you know, propped up to be that guy, he didn't fit in very well with Dallas. Did they have that guy last year with Jalen Brunson? Well, he's gone to New York now. I just find it fascinating that they have not been able to find top flight talent to put next to.
I mean, they're trying with JaVale McGee, and that's not.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's still, what is it for Luka now? Year five.
Amir is 8.
So if we're talking about this in year 7 and year 8, yeah, I mean, it's worth talking about in year 5. If it's year 7 and year 8, then yeah.
I wonder if he has the sort of James Harden disease, and that he's just supremely talented. And he does have high assist numbers, but he's so, so ball dominant that he controls the ball for so much time of the offense that it just, like, doesn't flow and it doesn't work. And over the big picture, they just don't win a ton of games. Now, I'm saying that, of course, they eliminated the Suns from the playoffs last year. So
no,
they do win some.
I know, but I grew up watching Magic and Larry, and they were ball dominant, and they were great passers, and they made other players, teammates, better, and guys wanted to play with them. Luka should have that same effect on his teammates because he's, I don't want to say that talented, but he's that kind of player. Where he can take the ball up the court and he can either create his own shot or find a guy. Like, he should be able to play that same type of game.
Yeah, I mean, and Luka's shooting the ball almost 23 times a game as well, which Magic's numbers never got that high. Even though he was ball dominant,
he's shooting more than he should be. I'm saying he's got the skill set to be more of the way Magic and Larry played. In fact, I talked to Tom Chambers about this on the air yesterday. I said, who does Luka remind you of from your era? And his answer was Larry. I don't think Larry Bird shot the ball 23 times a game. We'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
But this actually, Vinny, is really going towards your argument that maybe Luka should be sharing the ball more. And maybe that would help the Mavericks not be in an 11-11 team. Maybe he wouldn't be averaging 33.5 points a game, but maybe their win total would be a little better.
Larry Bird, highest number of field goal attempts per game for a single season. He did 22.0 twice. So, but he also wasn't the point guard. Luka is the, it's kind of this double-edged sword. Should he be sharing the ball more? Well, that goes back to the talent around him. You're going to share the ball more with inferior talent. Because you can?
Well, if he was shooting 23 shots a game, averaging 33 a game, and they were, you know, 20-5, mm-hmm. Okay, there better not be anybody complaining.
Well, yeah. I mean, but the results matter.
Right.
More than anything.
It'll be really interesting. In the Monty cut you played, he talked about how this might mean something extra for the Suns, that playoffs might still be in their craw. Paraphrasing. I wonder if that is true. I wonder if they're going to go out there and just want to kill the Mavs tonight. Because they played them opening night, but that was a crazy, weird game.
I think that game
fell behind by 18 points.
Right.
So if that whole stick in the craw out for blood revenge,
talking about how weird that was, yeah.
I don't think, you know, if that existed, I think it was probably taken care of on opening night. Now, if the Mavericks win tonight, that might rekindle some new feelings along those lines. But
I just haven't been feeling myself lately.
Well, sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's all right. None of us. It's that time of year.
Nerds.
What? All of these sites that just all of a sudden.
Jim never asked for a second cup of coffee at home. What the hell was that?
BasketballReference.com, ladies and gentlemen. Right click, mute site.
There we go.
After all these years of struggling with this on the air, Sarah finally
I got you.
Set me straight with a simple fix.
I think the Suns should come out loaded for bear tonight because it's the Dallas Mavericks. It's Luka Doncic. It's always a litmus test. I don't care if they're 11-11 or not. Country's going to be watching. Booker's got a chance to go up against one of the best in the biz. I mean, it's a game that you want to play well, and you're on the road. They had an easy one yesterday, and let's go. It's go time.
And
this is one of those games that you should be up for to play and play at your best.
Do you think that's affected at all by the fact that 2 days from now the Boston Celtics are in town, the best team in basketball? Defending Eastern Conference champs.
I think they should look at it as a back-to-back opportunity.
Yeah. That's
both,
the problem.
Both games, like a package deal.
We talk about parity in the NBA being like it's never been before. There used to be a lot of soft spots on NBA schedules. Those don't exist anymore. You don't find those runs of 3 to 4 games where you're like, well, they're playing nobody. Anybody can beat look at the standings in the Western Conference right now. I mean, Dallas is 10th with 11 wins. The ninth team has two less. The Utah Jazz has two less wins than the Suns do.
Again, we were talking about that yesterday as well. You could be number one in the West right now as the Suns are. You lose 2 or 3 games in a row, you could be 6th or 7th real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick.
That's how tightly bunched it is. 6:30 tip tonight, 6 o'clock pregame on the Arizona Sports app and 98.7. Coming up next, Cardinals. The bye week is behind them. 5 games left. And you got to wonder about what Bick calls zombie football the rest of the way. We'll get into that and more Cardinals talk next on this Big Red Monday. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings with Tim Ring in for Bick on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Big Red Monday and Bickley and Marotta Mornings on Arizona Sports. Presented by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
I don't think there's any question. I think Vance Joseph has done a fantastic job. He deserves a lot of credit. And I think, again, those young guys, you just nailed it. Zach Allen playing fantastic football. And you go down the list of whether it's our two safeties. You know, obviously, I think corner's an area that we can make some improvements. But for the most part, I've been very pleased with the way our defense has played, especially those young guys, those young defenders. I think Zayden's playing good football. Isaiah, again, they make mistakes like a lot of guys do, but they also make big-time plays, which, you know, 6'5" linebackers that can run like both of those guys do, they're hard to find.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, on with Burns and Gambo on Friday. At this point of the season, 5 games left. Bye week is now behind them. The New England Patriots, the next opponent for the Cardinals on Monday night at State Farm Stadium, their second Monday night game of the year. But there, Steve Keim talking about the defense, and Bick and I have had some interesting discussions about the defense. Bick has been very complimentary of the defensive performance, kind of the same tone you heard from Steve Keim there. I think the defense is better than we expected, but what's that say, actually, Tim? Does it say enough? Because if you look at the defensive metrics, the stats all say that this is still a very underachieving defense. You know, you can laud the young players for coming around, but where was that in the beginning of the season when they could have used some contribution from the younger players like Cameron Thomas, Myjai Sanders, who couldn't get on the field early in the season? I don't know. I think exceeding expectations when the expectations are so low doesn't really tell you anything.
I mean, listen, they had that nice stretch earlier in the year where they held a few teams to 20 points or fewer,
and
the offense couldn't play complimentary football, so they didn't win the majority of those games, and they were kind of playing better than the sum of their parts. And, you know, it was a defense void of a lot of, you know, Pro Bowl caliber players and playmakers, but they were kind of sticking together and they were getting the job done. But eventually, I just think there was a regression to the mean, and they ended up giving up a lot of points, Vinny. Uh-huh. And outside of Now, for a while there, they were among the NFL leaders in returns for touchdowns, and I think the two pick sixes against the Saints helped that. Obviously, Byron Murphy's return for a touchdown that won the Raiders game helped the stats there. But at the end of the day, I mean, they've given up, what is it now? They've given up total points
321,
which is
per game is the 26.8 is the second lowest.
Second lowest in your second most in the league.
Yeah.
Among the worst in the league in total points. So they haven't stopped a lot of people. And no. Outside of Buda Baker and J.J. Watt, I know the organization is probably pleased with the evolution of Isaiah Simmons to a certain extent, and certainly Zaven Collins, I think is trending towards being a really good football player.
Yes,
but overall, it just listen, they're 4-8, and they're 4-8 for a variety of reasons, and part of that reason is that the defense has not stopped enough people enough of the times, and I just don't think you can look at the defense. Dave Pasch, who's coming up, you know, next hour, said it the other day after they gave up 38 points to the 49ers in Mexico City after the game. I think Dave's exact quote was, you can't give up 38 points and call yourself a good defense.
No.
And that's coming from Dave. You know, the voice of the Cardinals. And so is this a good defense?
Yeah.
I mean, can we honestly sit here today on December 5th and say this is a good defense?
No,
these are the harsh questions you got to ask yourself.
You can say they played well enough, though, for the Cardinals to win more games than they did.
Yes, but they didn't do that. To me, Jarrett, that goes back to performance weighed up against expectations. They're better than we expected them to be. Now, the reason why they didn't win the Cardinals didn't win those games when their defense did do a solid job is because the offense has underachieved tremendously this year. So in terms of holding the defensive performance against expectations versus what the offense did, the defense wins that battle every single time. Kyler Murray, he's at the heart of the offense, obviously, highly paid. Quarterback in his fourth year as a starter. He's underachieved this year in most people's eyes, and he's been in the spotlight for a number of different reasons lately. Steve Keim talked to Burns and Gambo about that as well.
The fact that Kyler had to sit 2 weeks with the injury, I honestly thought from my perspective that the way he came back, watching his body language, his approach, the way he played in the game, I thought he actually did a very good job. And maybe sometimes those opportunities to be able to sit back and watch are chances to grow. And I think Kyler played a good football game, and I thought he did some really good things in terms of decision making and time that he had to run with the football, which are obviously difference makers for us.
Also, at the heart of the discussion, the spotlight has been the relationship between Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, or at least everybody's perception of that relationship. Here with Steve Keim on that.
I didn't know anything about mending. I just know that quarterback group is close with Colt and obviously Kyler and Trace. I think it's a good room. And as far as I know, I think those guys have all great respect for each other. And I think the more communication they have, the better, obviously, we're going to play. And if that means that Kyler's chances to sit out and watch and would increase communication with Cliff and our offensive coaches, then that's obviously a huge positive. That's all we can ask for.
Week 14, year 4, if this many people are talking about the relationship, the working relationship, and the chemistry between the quarterback and the head coach, that can't be a good thing, Tim.
It's not a good thing, and it's a problem. And when Ian Rappaport reports that the relationship has been tense and the Cardinals had to use the two-game stretch when Kyler Murray was hurt for Cliff and Kyler to work on their relationship, I mean, come on. What are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And also, by the way, why did Kyler Murray need to be hurt for those two to work on their relationship? Can't they do that when he's healthy? I mean, can't they work on their communication issues when he's healthy?
You would think.
I mean, what the hell is that all about? That kind of bothered me. Like, what, Kyler Murray has to be hurt for Cliff and Kyler to communicate and iron out their differences? I mean, give me a break. I mean, honestly, give me a break. And again, listen, you hear things coming out of the building from other players, from former teammates of current players, that there are issues between Cliff and Kyler. And that relationship is not as good as it should be or could be or needs to be. And that has to concern you if you're a Cardinals fan.
Yeah, and how much of the winning of the last 2 years, being a playoff contender 2 years ago, being in the playoffs last year, how much did winning kind of glaze over or, you know, patch up those communication issues. If it's this evident or this prevalent and being talked about, you know, when your team is losing, I agree with you. That's an issue.
Tim, to your point, do you think that Kyler's injury could have sparked some of the tension, budding tension between Kyler and Cliff? Maybe like an unwillingness to play and Cliff is getting ticked at him about that?
I mean, I can't say for sure, Sarah. It seems to me like there's almost a... there's a frustration bordering on a lack of respect from Kyler Murray's part. And I don't know if he's right or wrong for this about how Cliff manages the game and how he calls plays and how he gets plays in. I think you see it bubbling up for everybody to see when Kyler's storm is over and tells his coach to calm the F down.
Yeah, I mean,
and the way that Cliff runs his operation. I don't think Kyler likes it. And I don't think Kyler respects it. I don't think Kyler respects him.
I'm not on team Kyler in this. I'm not on team Cliff in this. But I think there's ingredients that they've had success together, and there's also I'm very curious to see what each looks like independent of the other. But on that particular front, a quarterback saying that to a head coach, no, even if it's in the heat of battle, that doesn't fly in a lot of places.
No, it does not.
I don't care
not.
Who the quarterback is and who the head coach is.
No, and it seemed like some of us were in the minority. I thought in real time that bothered me immensely. And of course the organization was going to downplay it because that's what they're supposed to do. Oh, it's a couple of competitors and they just want to win and that stuff happens all the time. Like, come on, man. Like you know, Tom Brady wouldn't go over to Bill Belichick and talk like that.
He would only talk to his teammates like that.
Right.
Yeah, you can want to win and you can be fiery without dropping that level of curse word on your boss.
Just that little instant, I just was a window into a relationship to me that spoke volumes into something that was not quite right in a bigger problem that exists between quarterback and head coach.
Well, the Cardinals aren't the only team with quarterback questions at this point in the season. In their own division. We'll get into some of those questions next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Tim ringing in for Bick today here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
Now before we get to hash marks, and I'll say this, Tim Ring is in today for Dan Bickley. Tim Ring will be in all week for Dan Bickley.
All week.
But that does not mean Dan Bickley got fired. Why do we always go through this? Are we expected to work every single day of the year? We get vacation time in this job, people.
He's been gone 2 days.
Wait, are people asking if he got fired?
At least one person.
It happens consistently whenever anybody misses time.
I mean, I could see if he was gone for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Hey. At least with him... When I'm not here, there's always the word finally before.
Yeah. Did he thankfully?
Did he finally get fired? Did he thankfully get fired?
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have probably changed the imaging if he got fired.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a lot of Bickley and Murata.
Maybe I wouldn't have said, like, every break, Tim Ring in for Bick today. Maybe that would be the case. I don't know. Just wanted to get that out there.
Yeah. These people are weird.
Bick but he's got some time away.
Yeah. He's still got 6 more days, though, to do something crazy in his vacation that would potentially get him fired.
True.
We could be in the middle of a segment, and it would be my turn to speak. And did Vince get fired? No, Tim is just talking at this particular time.
It's been 12 seconds.
Yeah. It's been 8 seconds. Okay. He'll speak. He'll speak next. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Now
hang tight.
It's been 8 minutes now, and he still hasn't spoken.
Oh no!
Oh no! Start the rumors.
Wild.
Just wanted to get that out there. Tim Ring in for Bick today, and tomorrow, and Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Bick will be back on Monday,
unless he gets fired.
And which I guess is still possible.
It's on the table.
I started thinking about the NFC picture, NFC West picture, from a quarterback standpoint a little bit differently. Going into the year, you had Trey Lance, Kyler Murray, Geno Smith, and Matthew Stafford as quarterbacks. I think most people, if you had to say, all right, pick your all-star quarterback. Who's going to be the best quarterback from the NFC West this season? You'd probably get a 50-50 between Kyler Murray and Matthew Stafford, correct?
Yes.
I don't think anybody would have picked Geno Smith.
Absolutely not.
Nobody would have picked Trey Lance. Geno Smith is clearly the answer to that question right now.
Yes.
Big touchdown pass to DK Metcalf yesterday late in that game. Seattle gets the win over the Rams. Now, was it the most impressive win? No. Geno Smith did get into a shouting match with Kenneth Walker on the sidelines in that Seattle win. But I think the best and most consistent quarterback in the division easily has been Geno Smith.
By default, to a certain extent.
He's played well.
He's kind of like the...
But the default part is not on him. That's up to everybody else doing their jobs, and everybody else has either been injured or underachieved.
Yes.
Yeah. Which does not... Either way you slice, it does not bode well for
He's like the last man standing kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like everybody else, we got drunk and went home.
And now, Stafford on the shelf, I would expect him not to play for the rest of the year. When you're talking about a spinal cord contusion, that sounds pretty serious. Rush back for a three-win team?
On a 3-9 team, no, we've seen the last of Matthew Stafford.
In general, that team is in a don't rush back mood with Aaron Donald, too.
Yeah. And John Wolford is now a quarterback. And did you see his final interception yesterday?
I did not. Was it quite... Look away. I'm hideous.
They're down. They're on like their 15-yard line. He threw a pass that just kind of died. He threw it right down the middle of the field, just kind of died. There was four defenders in the area and no Rams receiver. It got quite the reaction.
I was doing the Suns post-game show yesterday. Did Bryce Perkins get any run yesterday for the Rams?
I didn't watch speaking a of lot
former,
of that
speaking
game.
Speaking of former Valley quarterbacks,
he did not.
Now in the NFC West.
He had one rushing attempt for 5 yards, but did not throw a pass. John Wolford, 14 of 26, 178, two interceptions. That's a very Mungo Beanfield type performance.
Wolford's not an NFL quarterback. I'm very surprised McVay.
He was for one game of his entire career.
Yep.
When they beat the Cardinals, and that's it.
No, it's just that the other quarterback on the other side was even worse.
Whoops. John Wolford wasn't great in that game.
No, he was not.
He was the better of the two.
Right.
And now in San Francisco, a Super Bowl contender loses its starting quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, out for the rest of the year with a foot injury. And I did, some cursory research on it. When Brock Purdy starts for the San Francisco 49ers, and he played most of yesterday's game, he will be the first quarterback ever who had been selected as Mr. Irrelevant to start a game in the NFL. Sorry, your dude Roddy McCaida never did it.
He never did it.
Never. He doesn't even have a Pro Football Reference page.
So. God, he must have made a...
Preseason.
He must have made an impression on me in the preseason, that Roddy McCaida.
Well, you were working in Green Bay at the time, weren't you?
Yeah. I was.
That's how you knew that name.
Maybe I should have figured an option quarterback out of Army never started an NFL game. Hey, Roddy, you'll always have Disney World. All right.
Yeah, the parade. Where did they do that parade? Santa Monica somewhere?
Is it Santa Monica?
Yeah.
I think so. Back in the day, you actually went to Disney World, I think.
Wow.
I think.
Well, Brock Purdy is now very relevant because I don't think even this injury to Jimmy Garoppolo takes them out of contention for the big prize. I just don't.
Here's what I wonder. It certainly does not take them out of contention for a playoff spot. I don't think it takes them out of contention for a playoff win. Maybe two playoff wins, but man, does it take them out of contention for a Super Bowl?
Depends how much you believe in the Eagles and Vikings.
Or even a Super Bowl appearance, yeah.
All season long, we've been saying the Eagles and Vikings have these great, great records, but how great are they?
I've become an Eagles believer. They're really good.
They're growing on me as a bona fide, as the real deal.
The Vikings have not done that. They win every close game somehow, though, the Vikings. I don't know if that means it's good or bad.
I can't get the Cowboy-Eagle game out of my head when I talk about the Vikings being the real deal. The Eagles, though, man, that Jalen Hurts, put him in the MVP conversation, people. I mean, he took on a challenge yesterday and answered the bell again.
He might be the front runner right now.
He might be the front runner right now.
Because they can beat you in so many different ways. They ran for over 350 yards last week. They threw for over 350 this week. They destroyed Tennessee. Jalen Hurts might be the MVP candidate. By the way, your point on Minnesota, yes, they only have two losses. But you know who has the biggest loss in terms of point differential in the league this year? The Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah,
their 37-point loss to the Cowboys is the biggest rout in the league.
Think about 40-3, was it?
Yeah.
And this back to the 49ers.
What you were saying earlier, Tim, the Cardinals, if they just had one more win, all of a sudden you're saying, well, the 49ers have this injury. Seattle's been coming back down to earth.
We're right there,
baby. They're right there. They're only like a game or two out. If they can, you know, win these next two very winnable games, they're back to 500. Who knows what the 49ers would do? That one game made such a big difference, and that's the end of it.
Well, if my aunt had, you know what, she'd be my uncle.
Whoops. Exactly. Because let's say they had beaten the Chargers, and instead of 4-8, they're 5-7 right now.
They're a Monday Night Football win against the Patriots from looking at the Broncos as being a game to get them back to 500.
But wouldn't it just cloud your vision, though? At least the loss makes it a clearer picture. Like, and I was guilty of it a couple times, too. After they beat the Rams, I was like, oh, maybe they're not dead yet. I mean, they've never shown more than a week of signs of life in a row.
No.
Can you make the playoffs without stringing together two victories? Oh. No, you can't.
You are what your record says you are, and the Cardinals...
Here's something potentially, maybe possibly related to the 49ers. The Panthers are expected to release Baker Mayfield today.
Really?
Who will then go to waivers, and if there's, you know, all of a sudden a team looking for a quarterback...
Would you roll with Brock Purdy or Baker Mayfield if you're the Niners? If you're Kyle Shanahan, what would you do? Experience but shaky, or youth but a guy who's been in your system the entire year?
I think that's actually a very poignant question. The being in the system the entire year, yes, probably wins out for me, but I'd be lying if I said it's not intriguing to see what Baker Mayfield can do with talent around him.
Maybe you bring in Baker as a insurance policy.
Well, they certainly need that.
I mean, he's a better insurance policy than Josh Johnson.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. We'll keep an eye on that. I didn't expect to hear that news on Baker Mayfield being released. But
how about them apples?
Yeah, that's the Carolina Panthers. Coming up next, college football. The playoff field is set. Did the committee get it right? We'll get into that and more college football talk straight ahead. It is Bickley and Murata Mornings. Tim ring in for Bick today here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings.
How they lost that game mattered in this conversation. And they could, I mean, if you're going to lose the game, you couldn't have done it in a better way in overtime by a field goal. Committee Chair Boo Corrigan called it a heroic effort performance by quarterback Max Duggan, putting his team in a position to win that game. But again, it goes back to the regular season win against K-State. And Boo Corrigan talked to me about how the committee appreciated not only the comeback against K-State, but the fact that they wound up winning that game by 10 points. He even talked to me about TCU at Baylor and that fire drill of a field goal. He said they thought that that was the mark of a disciplined, well-coached team to be able to get back on the field and execute that to win that game when you have two losses and you're sitting there on the outside on the bubble. At the end of the day, this was rewarding TCU for a regular season win against what is now the Big 12 champion.
That is Heather Dinich of ESPN explaining, hey, the field was announced. TCU gets in despite losing the Big 12 championship game at Kansas and despite all of the belly aching from Alabama head coach Nick Saban. The Horned Frogs are in. Ohio State gets bumped up to number 4, taking the spot that was basically punted on by USC in that performance on Friday against Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. So Alabama on the outside looking in. And I got absolutely zero problems with it. Alabama's best win this year, Tim, came against Texas. A one-point game. TCU beat Texas more handily than Alabama did and has a better overall resume. I don't have a problem with this at all.
At the end of the day, you have to play yourself into the playoff. You have to get the job done on the field. It can't just be, despite what Nick Saban and Alabama fans want you to believe, it can't just be, well, if we played, who would be favored in the game? I understand that the playoff is supposed to be the four best teams. And who's a better team, Alabama or TCU? Tell me, answer the question. The regular season has to mean something.
I'm pretty sure Alabama was favored versus LSU and Tennessee, and they lost both those games, too.
Yes,
so
they did.
That doesn't always mean anything.
With all due respect to Heather Dinich, this whole thing that TCU lost in a good fashion for them. Like, are you telling me that if Kansas State would have won by 14 points, then Alabama would have been in the playoff? I mean, come on.
Well, TCU felt they didn't even drop a ranking spot. They were three going in,
right?
I think
that's a lazy narrative. I talked about the 2020 season with Notre Dame losing in the ACC championship game to Clemson and still going to the playoff. They were undefeated. Same scenario. They beat Clemson during the regular season. Mm-hmm. They were undefeated. They went to the ACC championship game. That was the COVID year where Notre Dame was a one-year member of the ACC. Clemson whipped him in the championship game, and Notre Dame still went. So this narrative that, oh, TCU was the best way possible to lose in overtime in a gutty effort, that's talking head nonsense.
It depends how much of a reason they were looking to get them out of there, though. Because if they lost by three touchdowns, maybe that would have been like, okay, good, now we can get rid of them. Do you think, are you in favor of getting rid of the championship games?
No. In fact, I think they should mean more. I was just going.
Are they going to mean more?
I don't think so. But what's the perfect system this year? Two teams would have been good. Everybody would have been satisfied with Georgia versus Michigan for the national title because 3-4 TCU right. And Ohio State. Ohio State is a good football team. They got destroyed by Michigan.
I know, but here's the problem, Vinny. If you're USC, USC would have been better off not playing in the Pac-12 championship game, much like Ohio State was better off not playing in the Big Ten championship
game. That's a major flaw in the system.
And it was a major flaw in the system.
So you want to know...
USC should have been like, we decline
the invitation.
The Pac-12 championship game invitation.
Washington,
Utah. Playing in this game can only hurt us.
Yes, we decline. We choose not to play.
Now, for much of that game, that was their philosophy. They basically chose not to play. They gave up 47 points to Utah. Here's the perfect scenario for a playoff, okay? Hear me out.
Okay.
Five power conferences. You don't get into the playoff unless you win your conference. That's an uneven number, Vince.
Yeah.
Five power conferences, one group of five representative. That is a conference championship from those teams. It's mind-boggling. No,
but then you have a Kansas State team in the playoff, right?
In Utah.
Really? In Utah?
Yes, absolutely.
Wait, so
I am not one of these people that is going to stand on the table and say the regular season needs to matter. College football is the only sport where we say this.
But
why?
That's what makes the regular season so good. That's why you're on the edge of your seat.
If you're playing for a conference champion, you're not going to have some scrub team in there.
Unless Purdue would have beaten Michigan.
But that didn't happen. And if Purdue beat Michigan, then yeah, let them get their brains beaten in the playoffs.
Boom,
so
boom,
you can't
boom.
Wait for a Purdue-Kansas State playoff game? Like, that's going to be great for you, Vinny?
So how would that work if five teams made it in a playoff?
Well, you could do
a group of five. So you get ACC, Big 12, Big 10, SEC, Pac-12.
Well, you can do five conference champions.
So this year that would
three,
be Tulane.
And then the two best get a bye.
Or you do three at large, or two a group of five and two at large. You could do it that way. Listen, it's a moot point. We're going to 12. So now here's what we got now. We got a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, top two teams would get a bye.
And we still have three teams capable of winning a national championship. So great. We got 12 teams. We're going to have some great... meaningful playoff.
There's some
football.
Good 40-point blowouts in the first round.
Can you imagine
rounds?
What some of those scores are going to be like? Because you're right, and I've always been a proponent ever since the BCS started that there's got to be a better way to do this. So I was always the more is better. That it doesn't translate to college football. We're going to see blowout after blowout.
I just don't like that they went from 4-12. Yeah. 4-8. 8 seems much better.
Here's the benefit. What you're going to have is outside of the two playoff games, and then obviously the national championship games. You only have three postseason games that really matter. And now you're also starting to see the trend of any draft eligible player. Not even if you're like a projected first round pick. If you're a draft eligible player, you ain't playing in those games anymore. Unless you're in a playoff game, you're not playing. Even a New Year's Six Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in the Fiesta Bowl. And it's not a playoff game, and you're draft eligible, you're sitting out.
Yeah.
So and it's happening more and more and more and more. And it's making it tough to care about these games as a fan. It's making it really tough to plop down $300 a ticket and buy a plane ticket to go see your team in a major, you know, New Year's Six bowl game.
Oh, try predicting what's going to happen in a bowl game.
If five of your top players aren't playing, including the quarterback.
And they're also, they're not going back to 11 games, right?
No.
So they could, the championship teams could essentially play 16 game seasons now.
Well, that's, you know, by the way, that brings up another good point, talking about plopping down $300 a ticket and buying a plane ticket. How are fan bases going to travel to multiple playoff games if your team makes a run? I mean, that's an expensive, especially in December. I mean, that's going to be.
College football fans have unlimited income. I wonder about every year when these fan bases come into town for the Fiesta Bowl.
But that's one game, Vinny.
I know, but they do it every year.
There's going to be a lot of
but back-to-back weeks, three straight weeks.
It's going to happen.
I mean, for the Michigan fan base,
Ohio State fan base, those fan bases will
chill out.
They're big enough that it doesn't have to be the same 50,000 people every time.
For Michigan and Ohio State,
right.
That's true. Yes, there's different groups of 50,000 people that
right.
can take.
Notre Dame and Alabama and USC.
You 50,000 go to this game, you 50,000 go to the next game.
When Colorado gets in there with Deion Sanders, who knows? I don't have a big.
But see, when if your basketball team makes a run, you only need like, you know, 8,000 people to go for football.
Yeah, and you get a weekend out of it.
If 8,000 people go, well, the stadium looks pretty empty.
Yeah,
but it's not like the local fans aren't going to pick up the slack.
Are they?
It's a playoff spot.
Are they? Do a lot of local fans go to the Fiesta Bowl?
My family did it every single year for 27
years. Yeah, I know a lot of
back in the day, let me tell you something. I've been to the last couple. There's a lot of empty seats out there, guys. A lot of empty seats.
Yeah, because it's Notre Dame every year.
Oh.
Okay.
It's been like Notre Dame once.
I had to get a dig in.
That was a hell of a game, too.
Well,
yeah, I saw Jared out there last year. He was wandering the concourse at like 9 o'clock
food,
in the
yeah.
morning. Yeah. It looked like he spent the night there.
Jared went to a sporting event?
Well, there was food there. So.
He went to lunch and a football game broke out. Coming up next, Sarah will take us through some social studies. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings. Tim Ring in for Bick here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.